The Two Stop In podcast series is inspired by the memory of the last surviving founder of the Australian Cinematographer Society, my friend, the late John Leake ACS. When he and his wife Marion retired from the film industry, they bought a little motel outside Sydney, and it became a tradition for cinematographers and other filmmakers to stop in and have relaxed conversations about the industry and the craft of cinematography. It earned the nickname of the T-Stop Inn. This series sets out to recapture the spirit of those conversations, but this time, we're inviting you to listen in.
The Tea Stop Inn.
Nicola Daly, ACS, is one of the standout cinematographers of our generation. She's done extraordinary work across documentaries, low-budget feature films, and most recently in primetime TV drama. She's also the eighth woman ever to be accredited by the Australian Cinematographers Society. Nicola, welcome to the Tea Stop Inn.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
You're back here in Australia. You've just shot a TV series, but you're based in the UK now.
Yes. My first TV series.
Your first TV series, wow. Have you found any differences working in the UK and working here?
In terms of working in the UK, I think the big difference I found when I went to London, which was about 5 years ago now, was that I've come from a documentary background. So I'd done about 10 years of documentary observational filming, which is where, when I came out of film school, that's what I got a lot of work in and got a quite good reputation in. And I travelled around the world and did all sorts of great things, went to North Korea and had this fabulous work, you know, travel life. But I wanted to do lots more drama. And what I found in Australia was that they were pigeonholing me a bit so that I would go for drama, even though I did, I think, three Australian features, which were all quite low budget. But people would always say to me, oh, you're a documentary cinematographer.
Mm.
And I went to London and I, you know, you go for meetings and you say, oh, I've got this big background in documentaries. And a lot of them said, oh, we love cinematographers who start out in documentaries in drama.
Wow.
So that was...
Actually, and there's a fantastic tradition of that in the UK. Like there's some... Roger Deakins, I think.
Exactly.
Is one example, which is not bad territory to be in.
Yeah. And I think because maybe that's... a history of where they come from.
That used to be the case here, though.
Yes.
Like a generation ago.
Yeah.
The top people were coming from a documentary background.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of
strange that that has changed so much.
Yeah, and you know these comments are coming from producers and so yeah, I guess that was a big difference when I got there is that it felt that they embraced that and they said, oh no, we love that because it means you work quickly and. You can edit in your head and you think fast and you use a lot of available light or, you know, you don't sort of black everything out and start again. You use what's there or you pick the right time of day. And so I often say that in interviews, you know, this is my philosophy of lighting. This is where I come from because this is what I grew up in the industry doing. So.
Yeah, that's the experience that you've got to draw on.
Mm.
So what was it like shooting this first drama series?
So I've just finished shooting the Letdown series 2 for the ABC and Netflix. And it was fantastic. Actually, talking about England, I've been sort of trying to get into TV there and they've been saying, you've never done TV, you can't do it. And
really?
Yeah. So I guess it works the other way as well. So to finally get your first TV series, you know you can do it, I guess it's because they work faster. So they think if you haven't, you know, worked at that speed before, then you can't necessarily...
They're hesitant to take the risk.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But it's not like in the low-budget features that I do that you have loads of time and loads of money anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, it's... You kind of go, oh, it's like banging your head up against a brick wall. But no, it's been a fantastic... I mean, it was really full on. Sometimes we were doing 10, 12 pages a day.
That is a lot of drama in one day.
Yeah. Two cameras and with babies. So the babies were the challenging aspect of the letdown.
Children and animals.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had 1 year olds, and some were great and some would just scream for hours and hours and drive the crew absolutely insane. But overall it was very, very, very funny, and the crew were a joy to work with. So it was, and the cast who were,
makes a big difference.
Yeah. So it was really fun, except for the screaming kids.
So what was it like, because Judd Overton shot season one of that. What was it like picking up that series?
I thought season one was great. It was so funny. And the producer had got in touch with me a few months ago, and I'd heard of the show, but I hadn't watched it. So, of course, I went away, watched it, and I thought it was just fantastic. And then I went to LA and I met with the writers and creators, Sarah Scheller and Alison Bell, and Alison Bell's also in the show. She's the lead. And we just got on, you know, really well. And it wasn't as if they, it's comedy drama set in domestic settings, so it's never going to, you know, you don't do something completely different, but they weren't necessarily looking for something that was exactly the same as season one. So there was an opening to...
So there's a bit of scope.
Yeah, interpret it in a different way. I mean, it's a year later in the story, so it's completely different, you know, time and period. But and a lot of the locations had changed, and so you know, we're still representing the story and the comedy, and telling the comedy in the best way you can, which I think is a skill when you're shooting something as well.
Yeah,
that choice of where you put the camera. You know, there's 100 places you can put it, but where do you put it, and where's the funniest place to put it sometimes?
Yeah.
You know, and that whole thing about the comedy's not necessarily in the line, it's in the reaction of the character who's standing next to them, you know. So
it's like that great quote about acting. Acting is what happens between the dialogue.
Yes, exactly.
And comedy all the more so.
Yeah, definitely. And they do a bit of improvising in The Letdown. So the director, Sarah and Alison directed one episode this time, and Trent O'Donnell, who directed the whole of season one, he did 3 episodes, and Amanda Brocci did 2 episodes. So there was different directors. So that was also really interesting, because Trent had done the whole season one. So now it had different input and different creativity, so we could go in slightly different directions.
Now, that kind of gets to an interesting area as well, because this is following that kind of well-established model of the DOP being the consistent person kind of at the top of the crew, and the directors coming and going through the season.
Yeah.
But there's also this trend now of, and probably the most prominent example of this, of course, would be Game of Thrones, where you have the director and DOP as a team coming and going for episodes, so that... So the cinematographer gets the chance to prep with the director. How did you find that played out, obviously being shooting while the directors were prepping?
It was interesting because of, and this is not the normal way they do it, I think, but because of the schedule of The Letdown and actors available, it's got a big cast, it's a big ensemble cast, so, and a lot of great Australian comedy actors, so... It's their availability. So we didn't necessarily shoot week one was episode one. It was all right. Over the place.
Wow.
So the directors swapped a bit scenes. I mean, so that was a bit... Wow. I prepped with Amanda, who's a fantastic director, and she preps a lot, and so do I. So that was great. But then, of course, I'm shooting for the whole 6 weeks, and then Trent's kind of come from LA.
Yeah.
And so there was a bit of catch-up that we had to do. But because he's so au fait with all the characters, and he's done the whole of season one, you know, it was just, I guess, the two of us just had to catch up a bit on how we worked together, which was fine because he's a brilliant comedy director. So it was really fun to work with. And, but it was a little bit, you know, tricky because you just have to sort of hit the ground running, so to speak.
Collaborating with a good director is an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It's a joy. And sometimes, I mean, I often think if you're a cinematographer, you've got to be a people person because there's so many different directors out there, and you work with everybody else on the crew, obviously. You've got to collaborate with the first AD. You've got to... So you know, managing, and you've got to manage your own team.
Mm.
So managing people and politics is a lot of...
It's a big part of the job.
It's a big part. Often too much. But on Pincushion, for example, which was the last feature I did, which is my fourth feature film, which is a British film, which went to Venice Film Festival in 2017. The director of that, Deborah Haywood, I mean, we had an amazing collaboration, and that's one that I'll cherish forever, and we're going to work together, you know, a lot. But it's such a joy when you find someone who you can talk to on that level about the story and the characters. Mm. And
I think once you've had one of those experiences, you look at those, like, director, cinematographer teams that work together, you know, it's like the Coen brothers and I just mentioned his name
Deakins.
Yep. Coen brothers and Deakins, or Spielberg and Kaminsky.
Mm.
And once you've had that amazing collaboration with a director, it totally makes sense why these people work together decade after decade,
because yeah.
It's such a satisfying thing.
Wasn't it Spielberg that said, "I've made a lifelong commitment to Kaminsky"? It's a bit like a marriage.
It was, I forget what the film was, but after Kaminsky had started directing, and I saw a Spielberg film on TV, and I was thinking, whoever he's found now that Kaminsky's directing is doing an absolutely pitch perfect copy of Kaminsky's style.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went and checked the credits and it was Kaminsky.
Yeah. Nice. Of course. You always make time for each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was and sometimes you click straight away, don't you? I mean, when I interviewed, I'd never worked with Deborah before Pincushion, and I interviewed for the job.
Mm.
And we just hit it off in the interview, you know. We happened to have grown up 45 minutes away from each other in England, in the Midlands, in the East Midlands. And she'd set her film in the hometown where she grew up in.
Wow.
So I think we connected on that level. But we also just, you know, and she's, I mean, I think she, because she's a writer-director, she comes at it from a writing point of view, not necessarily, she's not one of those directors who would call the lenses or whatever.
Yep.
But
and that's an interesting thing as well. Like, there is a huge variation in how that, like, where the crossover and where the demarcation is between directing and cinematography.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there's a huge amount of legitimacy right through that spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as a cinematographer, you're incredibly adaptable, aren't you? So you work with directors who know all the lenses and, you know, let's do this, and, you know, and then you work with directors who don't know. And I always say to them, because sometimes I work with first-time directors and they say, oh, you know, I'm really worried because I don't know the lenses or anything. And I always say, but it doesn't matter, because you're the, you know, often they've written it.
Mm.
You're the expert on the character journey and the story, and that's where all these choices come from.
Yep.
So we'll just sit down and discuss your story and the character arc and where that's going and where it's come from, and then we can go from there.
Yep.
And with Pincushion, we sat down and just watched a lot of films together, which is so much fun.
Yeah.
And Deborah would say, oh, I really like that, or, you know, I don't like that at all.
That's a fantastic way of doing it.
Yeah. And she didn't have to say, oh, I love, you know, I want the tableau style or whatever. Mm. We just watched films together and looked. Wow. I mean she was a massive stills photography fan, so we looked at endless books of photographs, you know.
Wonderful.
So yeah, it was great.
So tell me about the film.
So the film is about a mother-daughter. It's a pretty dark film. They move to a new town. The daughter's about 15. They move to a new town and the daughter goes to a new school, and she falls in with the wrong girls at school. And it's about being bullied, and the mother gets bullied as well. So it's about the mother's a hunchback. That's not the PC way to say it. And so it's about being bullied even into adulthood, and they get sort of pushed to the margins of society. And so it's, you know, yeah, it's a challenging film to watch, but it's very affecting.
And it's been very well received.
Yeah, definitely. It's been really well received. It got its general release in Britain in this summer. And it's done really well. It's done all the festivals. And
fantastic.
Yeah.
So which cameras were you using on Pincushion and then on the Letdown?
On Pincushion, we used the Arri Alexa. And we used from Arri in London, and we used Super Boltar lenses.
Oh, nice.
Which were just stunning. And I think at that point, Arri had just rehoused them.
Wow.
So they were from the 70s and not that.
They were kind of, at that point, they were the Hollywood lenses in a lot of ways, weren't they? They were the classic old Hollywood look.
And they were so beautiful, you know, and they didn't match at all, which I loved. And I think it was, it's a couple of years ago now, but I think it was the 35mm, which was, you know, if you shot wide open on it, it bloomed, all the highlights bloomed. So often on the, then, you know, you obviously go in and do coverage and put on a longer lens. I'd have to put on ProMist to try and kind of even it out a bit.
Wow.
The young girl in it who plays Lily has got the most beautiful white, pale skin. She looks a bit like a young, very young Sissy Spacek.
Wow.
So she's, you know, these lenses and her skin, and it was just like...
Amazing combination.
Yeah, yeah. But Carrie was a massive influence on our film, even though our film's not a horror, but it is dark. But and they'd used those lenses. So when we tested those ones and Speed Pancros and some old Cooks. But the Super Boltars were just, stunning.
Wow. It's amazing how the vintage lenses have really come back in a big way.
Yeah.
Recent times. And so much of it is about the imperfections.
Yeah.
What engineers would call the imperfections.
Yes. Which is the beauty of them, I think. And the thing with Pincushion was that it's got a lot of fantasy sequences in it. So it's really, I mean, the director calls it sort of a fairy tale, because, you know, all those fairy tales like Hansel and Gretel, and, you know, they're all quite horrible. Horrible things happen, you know, grandmas get eaten by wolves and, you know, kids get put in ovens, and, you know, they're not nice tales, and neither is Pincushion. And so there's a big fairy tale element to it. So the fact that the Super Boltars were this soft, kind of creamy, rounded looking, I don't know, almost beautiful, but we were taking that look and then saying, hang on a second, it's twisted around and it's not quite right for these characters as you go along in the story, you know. Things don't go well, so it was sort of taking that element and turning it on its head a bit.
Wow. And what sort of aperture ranges were you working in predominantly with those lenses?
I shot, I think, at about 2.8. The woman who plays, Joanna Scanlon, who plays the mum, and she's an amazing British actress, she... there's not a lot of mark, you know, they're not hitting their marks a lot. There's a lot, there needs to be a bit of freedom with their acting. So we didn't want to shoot very shallow everything so that the actors could move around a bit more and we weren't kind of locking them into a space.
It's interesting to me how much that thing of working wide open all the time has almost become a given, and yet... For reasons like what you've just talked about, there's often a lot of value in choosing a different aperture.
Yeah.
Rather than just as minimal depth of field as possible.
Sometimes I think it's a bit of an easy option just to shoot really wide open on really fast lenses and let everything go to mush.
Yep. And then the editor try and sort it out.
Yeah. I mean, cinematography is all about directing where you want the audience to look at a certain point in time. And obviously for some things, if, you know, for example, the story is completely in that person's mind and and then you want all the background to disappear, then it's perfect, yeah. you know. But to shoot that way all the time, just because it looks pretty, I don't...
Just because it's fashionable.
Yeah. yeah.
It's and, not... you know, it can be fantastic. I mean, I think one of my favourite examples of that, before it was fashionable, is Conrad Hall's work on Searching for Bobby Fischer. Mm. It was incredibly shallow depth of field.
Yeah.
And so perfect for the story.
Yeah.
And yet the extent to which it's become ubiquitous now, I think, is a lot of people missing the opportunity to tell stories with different depth of field.
Yeah.
Rather than just turning it up to 11 all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's so many tools at your disposal, you know, like if you want to pull focus from something to something, or, I mean, people don't, you don't see a lot of things like split diopter use these days, or
true.
Actually for the fantasy sequences for Pincushion, we use star filters, which I think is terribly unfashionable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In a wonderful way.
But yeah, they were so good because they just, I mean, again, it comes down to the character, doesn't it? So Iona in the film, if she imagined something, it would look like a sort of crocheted, pastel, gauzy dream, because that was her world. And then if you took that and enhanced it into her fantasy world, then of course it's going to look sparkly and shiny, and she's 15 years old. And
yeah.
So that was how we made the fantasy sequences look.
And there's something about doing that stuff in camera as well.
Yeah.
Because so much of that stuff can be done in post, and there's often very rational arguments for doing stuff in post. Mm. But there's also something very powerful about baking it into the image in camera.
And I think because I was trained on film, I come from that world of you do it, you know, you make it look like you want it to look, and then you just enhance it in the grade. You don't make it up, you know, later on. I mean, in, for example, in Pincushion, there's a massive color sort of journey. So I used color correction filters, old, you know, the ATA and the 85. And
which probably don't get a lot of use these days.
No, Ari had to find them in the back of the cupboard, I think. But I used them as color filters.
Fantastic.
So the ATA was a nice icy blue color filter. And yeah, I think some people have asked me, why didn't you just do that in post? But there's something so organic about the way that it shaped the light. We used it a lot in like a local convenience store. So you've got the overhead fluoro lights, which, you know, we enhanced, but we left on because you can see them. I didn't correct those. I just let them. Then this ADA filter just makes this look like this icy blue world, you know, where, because the characters have gone into the outside world, which is not very nice to them. And I like using the old stuff or anything, but just not using it in a way that maybe you necessarily think you should use it for.
Yeah. When we first met, you were working in camera prep at a rental house. Has that informed your confidence with using the technology, and particularly the older technology? That hands-on familiarity with a lot of different gear?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I met Michael Saracen years ago, and when I was about 20, I think, and he said, there's two ways you can get into... I said, I really want to be a cinematographer, what do I do? Or maybe I said, I really want to be in the camera department. And he said, there's two ways you can do it. You can either work your way up the camera department, clapper loader, so forth, or you can work in a rental house. And so when I moved to Sydney, I tried, you know, I was a runner and did all sorts of stuff and worked in a post house and thought, don't want to do that. And made sandwiches for people very badly. And I ended up working on reception at LEMAC in Sydney. And I thought I knew stuff because I'd come from a film degree and I didn't know anything about any of the equipment. And I think my first job was to scan all the bits so they could travel from Sydney to Melbourne. So I learnt every single piece of every single camera that we had. And it was a really good way to learn, you know. And then, you know, I went to prep, so I took them apart and put them back together. And
because even things like using the ADA filters, I think there's a lot of people of our generation who that would just never occur to.
Yeah.
Now, especially the ones who didn't experience working with film.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that we take and twist and use, shift and tilt lenses, for example. Mm. You know, I love that creative side of it. I think it's...
They were the absolute in thing for a few years, weren't they?
Yeah,
it was just definitely. Like they had to be used on everything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Dion Beebe's In the Cut is such a, you know, it's still one of my favourite looking... I mean, it's a great film as well, but it's cinematography-wise, I think it's one of it's a masterpiece.
Mm, definitely. After that, you went freelance and then went to AFTRS.
Yes.
The Australian National Film School.
Yeah.
Having already been working in the industry, and you'd also done a previous degree.
Yeah, an undergraduate film degree in England. And then I moved to Sydney and worked in a rental house in Leamack for 3 years. And also what I must say about that is that I met so many people as well, you know, yourself included, and producers, directors.
The rental house, everybody's coming and going.
Yeah, it was actually a brilliant piece of advice that Michael gave to me. And when I went back to the UK 5 years ago, I had a coffee with him and I said, thank you so much.
It worked.
Yeah, I'm a cinematographer.
Nicola Daly, ACS, thank you for making time.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me.